Hello?
Oh no, she's dead.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's all shits and giggles till somebody dies.
Here it is, here it is. It's just me. Oh no, Becky's sick again. So it's me. I'm own. Oh yeah, I'm own in the studio. Could say anything at all. Could tell you that the devil's inside my brain. I could start screaming. Nothing. No one could do anyone. No one could do anything. I could start literally screaming. Could start shaving off all my hair. Pulling out my fingernails. No one could stop me. This is live radio, people. It's 5 o'clock on a Tuesday. Welcome back to Death of Funny Business with me, Natasha Spencer-Levy. All on my own some today in the studio because poor Becca has... I was about to say Rebecca. Ah, she doesn't like it when I call her Rebecca, but I like calling her Rebecca. Rebecca has a sinus infection. Poor thing. She's got temperature. So she's at home all tucked up in bed. And we said to her, it's okay. It was just have a little sleep. Have a little sleep. Okay. So yeah, welcome to a solo show with me. It's Tuesday, I already said that. But yeah, so we do have a guest today, which is really exciting. So I'm very glad to be interviewing Nathaniel Dye, who is, well, he's a very interesting human being who's recently, well, at 36, he got diagnosed with stage 4 incurable bowel cancer. And he was given a terminal diagnosis, basically. And he's been campaigning for improvement on the NHS because he spent 100 days waiting for cancer treatment. And yeah, I think it's going to be a very interesting conversation about the state of our country, for one. Second of all, what it's like to grieve your healthy body, or what you thought might have been your healthy body. Your body that's already alive. Still alive. Still alive. I'm being told I've got to move my mic down. Thank you, Yasmin. Do you know what it is? I like hiding behind my microphone because I have a little pimple patch on my chin because oh, for those of you following my cycle, as we do, it's Tasha's Period Corner. Da, 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 da. We should get theme music for Tasha's Period Corner. What would it be like? I think it'd just be like that. Tasha's Period Corner. Da, 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 da. I haven't started yet. I'm late, but trust me, it's not a baby. It's just stress. It's literally just stress. I'm just stressed and tired, so I'm breaking out, which means I have a pimple patch on my chin, for those of you who care, which means I like hiding behind my microphone. But Yasmin says, no, I have to start sit up straight like a lady, okay? And do my job. I know. Thank you. Oh, I'm replying to things that are happening inside my head that you can't hear. It's the voices. We have some updates. We have a new Instagram. Woo! Everyone in the studio cheer. All my friends are cheering. Woo! We have a new Instagram. Death of Funny Business has its own Instagram page, which is very exciting, which means that you can now just see all of our clips all at once, all wonderfully collected in a lovely little collage of things. And for those of you who are new here, because we realize that sometimes people are coming to our platform here and discovering the show for the first time. This might be the first time you've ever discovered the show. Somebody might have died. Congratulations. Welcome to the club. The water is fine. We got cookies, okay? Here at Death of Funny Business, normally me and Becky, but just today, me. We talk about death, we talk about grief, we talk about life, we talk about love, we talk about what it means to be alive, what it means to die, and then what it means to take that love and not know what to do with it. And hopefully we can support people and hopefully bring some joy and a little bit of laughter, a little bit of the funnies to anyone who's grieving. Grief is a really fucking annoying, boring, fucked up thing that we all deal with. And funnily enough, Becky and I have some first-hand experience. I do sound like I've lost my mind. I sound like I'm pretend, like I have friends, and Becky's actually like not real. And I'm like, yeah, Becky, do you want to say your bit? Oh my God, guys, she's so funny. Yeah, because her dad died. Oh God. Okay, no, I'm not having an episode. My mum died when I was 7. And even at the age, the ripe old age of 25, I'm still discovering things, learning things. And yet, I would say I'm in the happiest era I've been in a long time. And it's a very interesting world coming to do this every Tuesday, where Becky and I explore different types of grief, different tools to help grief. But that's what it's all about. It's about finding the right tools for you. And Becky's dad died when we were 18. And then our teacher died when we were 24, 23. And Becky and I got together and she was like, let's do a podcast. I was like, well, let's fucking do a podcast. She was like, okay, let's go. And do you know what's crazy? The rest is history. So 3 deaths. And how long have we known each other? God, 20 years? Oh, 19, 18 years. 18 years of friendship. We've done rock band together, school plays. We both played inappropriate characters in several primary school productions. I was once the star in the Nativity. Pretty sure she was pretty jealous about that. I'll never live that down. Peaked at life at that point. Sung a song called Twinkle Sparkle. Got given a tiara, pair of gloves. It was pretty epic. That might be the best thing that anyone's ever done for me after my mum died. Sparkly gown, pair of pink satin gloves, and a tiara. What more does a girl need? Nothing. It went like this. Twinkle, sparkle, I'm the shiniest star of all. Something special, it's me, they call... I am having an episode. This is what happens when people leave me alone, okay? This is... You lot know. You lot know by now. And you know what's crazy? I don't care. I was just saying to my friends the other day, I've reached this, like, level of... not giving a shit about what people think of me, that is very, very freeing. Like, I really don't care anymore. But, like, truly. Not like, oh, I don't care. Like, no, I actually don't. And, like, to a point where my brain is like, wow, you could rip out your eyeballs right now and you wouldn't mind. No, I'm kidding. Sorry, guys. Getting very dark. Producer Yasmin is a little bit scared. Tasha's period corner. But yes, we have Nathaniel Dye. He's actually an MBE. He's received, it was very impressive, if you ask me. But then again, that's a whole conversation about capitalism and democracy and what's the royal family called? Patriarchy. No, that's not it. Monarchy! Thank you, Yasmin. Yasmin's whispering in my ear, just making sure I get the words right. That's the word I was looking for. It's all about monarchy. Do we like the monarchy anymore? Don't know. Is that woke? Fuck knows, mate. I'm not sure. Maybe we'll find out today. Maybe Nathaniel will educate me. I think we're going to have a very interesting conversation about the government because I have feelings about the NHS. I have feelings about the NHS. As a chronically ill person, you guys know, a little bit unwell, still waiting on a rheumatology appointment that I've waited about 6 months for and I'm still... I've had 2. And for some reason my GP and my rheumatologist can't quite get their shit together. It's like having divorced parents. They keep fighting. She's asking me to send him things. He's saying to me, she's not giving me the letters. And I'm like, well, can you lot just get on the phone with each other and talk? Zoe, Tamir, sort it out, guys. I'm serious, I'm naming you. Name and shame. I'm going to say it. And on that note, we're going to go to a break and then Nathaniel will be in the studio with me and we're going to ask some important shit, guys. Over and out.
FUBAR Radio. Access All Areas with Bobby Norris.
We are joined by Miss Safia. If I could produce you a salt, what is he like on paper? Sound like we're on Love Island.
Okay, on paper, my type has to have a good soul, good purpose and calm energy. I'm in my energy era where you've just got to come in and make me happy. I don't need you for anything. I want to find happiness and I need him to be kind.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
I was fine on this beach the other day. I didn't know the time of high tide changes, and I had no idea it could come in so fast. So I'm finding out the hard way. From this fella, the Coast Guard, who dropped in to get me out.
Ready!
Before you go to the coast, check the tide times online. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
Politics Uncensored.
The more alarming question is, what does this say to victims of these sorts of crimes which have been alleged on them? Essentially, what they'll be looking at is two men who have a huge online influence, who say some of the most disgusting things online and spout off some of the, I think, most dangerous sort of ideas and narratives in the online space, that they've essentially been able to travel to the US while they're still under investigation in multiple countries.
Pulse of the Nation with Andrew White on FUBAR Radio.
Are you aware of the tea alarm?
Tell me more!
Yeah, so it's this cultural phenomenon that we have in Britain. It's an alarm at 3 p.m. Where everybody in the UK has to have a cup of tea, and if you miss it by a certain number of minutes, you get fined, basically.
This ain't real. This is not real. I'm not playing into this. Yeah. You think me watching Keeping Up Appearances, you think Mrs. Bouquet was missing a 3 o'clock tea alarm? Y'all won't get me.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
Hello and welcome back to Death, a Funny Business with me, Natasha Spencer-Levy. Can't say my own name. It's one of those days. And we have Nathaniel Dye, MBE, in the studio today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
No, thank you. How are you doing?
How am I doing? That's really quite complicated. So, in short, I've got cancer.
Woo!
Yeah. That's one of the stranger responses I've had, but let's go with that. Yeah.
Yeah. We're just going to be toxically positive here.
Well, completely. I mean, I guess a lot of people are positive on my behalf, so may as well keep that energy going in some ways. I mean, I think we've started straight away that the humour gets real dark. So I apologise in advance.
Oh,
you know,
don't worry. You didn't hear the beginning of the show. I was just talking about how crazy it is that I'm on my own today because Becky isn't very well. So she sends her apologies for not being here. But I was just saying how I've been given free reign of a studio and I can do whatever I want, include pull out my fingernails or scream for 15 minutes. But I'm not going to do that because I'm a normal person. And the humour does get dark, but that's okay. Obviously here we talk about death and we talk about grief. And I guess my first question would be to just, do you want to tell us a little about your story and your journey and how you've kind of ended up being this spokesperson and activist for those suffering with cancer?
Well, that's very kind of you to say. I seem to have fallen into it by accident, really. I'm talking about the MBE, the citation. I did it edited to start with because it said something to do with cancer campaigner, which sounds like I'm campaigning for there to be more cancer, which I can assure you is definitely not the case. You know, I some people even don't like to share with me their good news. Say, if I don't know if I had a good scan, or even if the cancer's got shrunk a bit, or even disappeared. Mm. And I'm thinking, well, I mean, that's very sensitive, but I don't want to bring anyone down with me.
Yeah.
You know, and unfortunately, I guess I am going down at some point, because in my case, we're at stage 4, and there's bowel cancer, which actually isn't in my guts at the moment, because I had some emergency surgery and I've got my designer colostomy bag and something called a stoma, which I've named Homer because it rhymes in a song.
I like it.
Absolutely, Homer the Stoma.
It's
full of fart jokes. The rest of my album is all sorts of poignant tearjerker ballads. But yeah, yes. Homer's song
and
is
then
a bit
Homer's,
more
it's just
silly.
It's your like neo-pop punk era, I feel.
I would say so.
Yeah, you've just like transitioned. You have that little B-side situation. Yeah, I like it.
Well, you've got to have some light relief when life gets difficult. But it got pretty difficult earlier this year, just for a bit more context.
Yeah, for sure.
Because and everyone says the word terminal far earlier than it's medically true. Mm. So I was told relatively early on, within maybe about 3 months of diagnosis, that you know, if it was at stage 4, cancer would kill me slowly or quickly. And initially, the general 5-year survival chances are about 10% or so.
Oof.
Yeah, I mean, we know what's coming. Yeah. I also lost my mother to the same cancer I have, so especially know what's coming.
Yeah.
But then at the beginning of this year, because it spread to, where do I start? All the L's. So liver, lymph nodes in various places, lungs, got about 50 little tumours on my lungs.
Oh.
Although apparently not too much to worry about. Unless
really?
They spread to the brain, which they have.
Oh,
so
all
I've,
right.
I've got a little kind of nugget there. I was really concerned at first because it's on the right side. And, you know, I'm a musician. I'm quite creative. And that's a creative centre.
Yes.
But I was told it wouldn't necessarily affect my personality. So that's good.
Okay, that's great to know. What do you play? Because I read that you're a music teacher.
I've just been in the studio for 3 days recording with a ska punk band called Filthy Militia. And I play the trombone. We've got a nice little 3-person horn section in addition to all the, you know, the standard rock band stuff.
Love.
So it's just the kind of music that was really popular when I was, you know, coming into my musical, you know, appreciation late teens time. And
incredible.
It doesn't really matter that no one really listens to stuff anymore because there's a real niche around, for example, the New Cross Inn has like ska punk nights all the time.
I love the New Cross Inn. I went to university in that area. Well, in New Cross, it was literally like one of our, and yeah, they have some great, shout out to the New Cross Inn. They have great music nights because they used to do an emo night. They used to do like, yeah, oh my gosh, so much fun. You just brought back a whole bunch of memories for me.
Well, it's kind of like a whole bunch of memories for me because, I mean, and this all happened since I got sick. And I guess like just being in a band, that kind of thing, you know. Often if you play something like the trombone, you just play whatever needs a trombone. So straight-laced stuff like orchestras, etc. But this is a little bit more fun in a way. It's like, yeah, I've always wanted to be in a band. And I ended up like subbing for a guy whose partner was having a baby. And just ended up staying, and they kind of took me under their wing.
Oh my god, I love that!
And now we're just living this rock star lifestyle. And I guess because, we'll keep positive, I suppose. And
well, we can do whatever. If you want to get hella negative, you're more than welcome to. It's valid.
It's a kind of ironic positive. I mean, they tend to be. Because I don't exactly have to say to retirement, so I can take on gigs that make absolutely no money make no economic sense.
Yeah.
And spending what's going to be 2.5 weeks in the studio recording an entire album that's going to make very little. Like, you know, a CD is very difficult to sell. You know, and vinyl is easier to sell. So therefore, this isn't an economic venture.
No.
It's just an absolute labour of love for
these
musicians.
You
know,
do you feel like your diagnosis has changed the way that you view your life and how, I mean, it sounds like it has, like you're already taking on passion projects instead of kind of carrying on in a way that's, I guess, the most of us would do.
Well, I don't know if it's true that there's a most of us. I think it's just whatever feels right.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, I try not to deal in cliches, but one of them is really true, that you do walk out of that room when you're told how ill you are. And in my case, relatively recently, yeah. I've been told it's definitely less than a year. And that's the official definition of terminal.
Yeah.
But you're a different person. Mm. And pretty much right from the beginning, I had two real kind of moments of clarity, I suppose, just thoughts of clarity. One of them being, well, this is really rubbish. And I didn't necessarily know what to look out for in terms of bowel cancer symptoms. Mm. Like, I literally didn't know my shit. And so
I just want to give you props for that. That was brilliant. Thank you so much.
Well, it's okay. You know, I mean, I've got a bag of it just sitting in, just always with me pretty much. Like, it's probably coming out right now. It's just how it works. But yeah, so raising awareness so that honestly others don't end up like me, because younger age groups like ourselves, or me just about, I think I'm not yet 40. Mm. I know I'm not yet 40. It's the fastest growing age group for that particular cancer, and for actually a lot of cancers. Like, initially I was told by my GP, for good reason statistically, I suppose, that I was far too young to have cancer at the age of 36 going on 37. Mm. And okay, I suppose, as you're worried because your mum died of the same cancer, I'll give you a test just in case. Turned out just in case got very real. But not very quickly, because I had a bit of a wait for treatment.
And let's talk about that.
What I'll say is that the NHS is full of heroes, and one person did anything wrong at all. But I think it's like the British cycling team talk about the accumulation of like marginal gains. Mm. Well, this was like the accumulation of marginal waiting times that were just a little bit longer than that you think they should be. And that amounted to what I've since found isn't actually the most uncommon wait for treatment, which was from putting my hands up with all the bowel cancer symptoms, including, you know, including while we're here, like blood in my poo. That was, I don't know, I'm a little bit colorblind, so I wasn't certain for a while, but definitely. And at one point, and this isn't normal, it was ridged a little bit like a churro. Okay, if that happens, you go see a doctor.
Fascinating. Are you listening, people? Churro poo, not for you.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it could be one or two ridges and not much so pronounced, but I mean, yeah, a few friends can't have churros now because I've told them their story. So apologies if anyone's listening to this while eating, but I personally have no regrets right now. The NHS talk about a continuous change in your bowel habit, which essentially might mean going to the toilet a bit less, a bit more often. Mm. In my case, it was quite frequent and like lots of abdominal pain, up to about 10 times a day. That is, even if it's gradually caught up on you, which it did, and even if it comes and it goes and sometimes it's there, sometimes it's not, just please see a doctor.
Keep an eye.
I mean, the worst that could happen is that you've gotten someone to take this like really quite insignificant test that doesn't cost much time or money for the system, and you get the all clear. Isn't that wonderful? But in my case, if I'd have maybe not for I can't make it to a clinic for ages because I've got to work really hard, and that was honestly one of my major thoughts. Like, really? I haven't got time to go to a doctor and get myself checked out because it comes and goes, it'll go away again. I could have potentially gone sooner, but once I got in the system, the government target at the time, or with the previous government, was 62 days, so 2 months. Oof. And I ended up waiting over 100.
Yeah.
And in that time, I was initially told, which is a strange thing to be told when you've got cancer and if you know about the stages, that it was stage 4, but what they call locally advanced, which is good stage 4, or as much as that can be.
Yeah, it's like in one place, not everywhere.
Yeah, so it just come from like the lining of the bowel to my liver, and there was one little spot in the liver that they could get rid of, both of them, and potentially it wouldn't spread anywhere else. Mm. And so it might be like a really difficult year of chemo, maybe a bit of radiotherapy just to zap it, and then all being well, go and live your life. Then.
Oh, really?
Then scans gradually got booked and gradually trickled in over about 6 weeks or so. And over that time, it was something called a PET scan, which pretty much injects radioactive, some kind of radioactive sugar dye, which lights up tumours like a Christmas tree. And
that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool.
I mean, no, it's not cool, but you know what I mean.
I'll show you my lung scan. It's really pretty.
Oh, I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's got about 50 little dots on it. Mm. Yeah, we'll put it on a podcast notes or something, yeah. Right?
Yes,
and,
please.
yeah, that's it. Like inspiring interiors as well as exteriors.
That's the album cover. That's what it really is. Your Christmas tree lungs.
Yeah, that's definitely.
I think that's it.
That's at least in the insert.
Yeah, definitely.
If anyone does it anymore. But so that discovered a couple of lymph nodes in my neck, which pretty much made things a little bit more serious.
Yeah.
And so we're now talking, along with those average, 5-year survival chances, 10%. Maybe most people after a year, it's kind of 50-50, although most bowel cancer patients are over 60 years old. So I'm in middle age. So I was thinking, okay, I'll try and get at least past a year. Mm. And at that point, I mean, just going back to where we were ages ago, I just thought, right, well, what do I want to do? So at this point, I am well into running at a dangerously addictive level. So I've got up to ultra marathons.
Oh, my gosh.
I've run 300 milers, the most recent of which was about 2 days before the colonoscopy that showed me that I had cancer in the end.
Yeah.
And so I had to have this this procedure and fast for it and have like a zero fiber diet.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of 10,000 calories approximately depleted after having run 100 miles. Then I have to fast.
Oh,
I have to take
this
stuff called bowel prep, which clears out your insides properly.
Yeah.
And then I have... Well, after it's finished, I have the best meal of my entire life.
What did you have?
Which was a mini pack of 3 custard creams.
Oh.
Because I've had to fast after an ultra marathon, that's 100 miles. And then after having had my 3 custard creams, I know something's up.
Oh.
Because there's a little tiny room and my brother who's taking me home because I've been sedated is sitting there.
Yeah.
And when there's someone else in the room as well as a doctor, it's going to be interesting.
Mm.
And I'll never forget these words. Bear in mind, this is a professional doctor.
Were you asleep? Did they put you to sleep for that?
I'm not quite to sleep, but sedated. So a little bit drowsy.
Like drowsy.
So I'm told, and I vaguely remember this, that a camera goes in and it comes out again. And I'm told that there's something obstructing the camera. And I'll never forget this phrase, bearing in mind it's quite a serious conversation.
Yeah.
Then I tried the baby camera. Sorry? The baby camera?
Camera for a baby?
Is that a camera for a baby?
Camera of babies?
The camera, and I'm a little bit confused. And then he goes in with, and that means there's at least a 70% chance you got cancer. And then the worst bit comes. And bearing in mind, I've had emergency surgery. I've had days, weeks on end in excruciating pain.
Yep.
Worse than that was the 3-week wait for whether I had cancer or not.
That's crazy.
Because that is the real life-changing bit. And I think since then, things have pretty much been half expected. I've been able to ride the wave, but that was not a rideable wave, I would say.
Because I guess sitting in uncertainty... It is more fearful than, but it feels it could be more fearful than actually knowing the answer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
the anticipation of everything is just, I wonder, why did you have to wait? Was it the 3 weeks between you had the scan and then they decided, or?
We're talking waiting for biopsies. And for
3 weeks for that.
and this is where just the system is so clunky. So something called MDT, which is a multidisciplinary team, which discusses your case.
Mm.
And that just forfeit the wrong part of the week. And then you have to get on someone's books to literally just talk to a consultant because, it was possibly going to be longer, but I remember pretty much crying down the phone when told how many days later an appointment might be and was told, okay, you can see a senior nurse.
okay.
At that point, desperate enough.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty much from that point, we're talking, I would say a story that would be familiar to a lot of people in terms of lots of chemo. Yeah. And a few surgeries and things, but I've been really, really lucky, and that might be a strange thing to hear.
No, please.
Up to now, it's over 2.5 years since diagnosis, coming up to 3. Mm. So I had kind of a 3-month chunk of surgery and chemo and then surgery to get the bag, which ended up being emergency because I got a another bowel obstruction, which very nearly killed me. I was told by a nurse, right, this is when I'm kind of just trying to get through every single day without too much excruciating pain.
Yeah,
and by the end of this, I can barely eat or drink.
Yeah.
But I'm told, have a hot bath, maybe some peppermint tea.
The frickadoo. What?
That didn't work.
I love it when health professionals do that. Like, I mean, I do not have cancer. I've not experienced anything like this, but I am on a kind of, I have a fibromyalgia diagnosis, a chronic pain diagnosis, and I have also waited for the NHS for a long time and things like that. And that when you kind of go back and, you know, you've been told that you have something, and then the response is, take an ibuprofen. And you're like, it's not quite, I don't think that's quite going to cut it, Karen. Do you think so? Yeah, no, well, that is infuriating.
But by the way, thank you for not kind of belittling your condition, because that's what, everyone does that. I mean, I'm dying probably within 7-8 months doesn't mean that, for example, right now you're probably in more pain than I am, you know.
I doubt
so
that.
I don't know, it happens a lot, and it kind of annoys me.
Yeah,
because I mean, it's not, I've kind of assumed that when you're really, really ill, you're ill all the time, but not necessarily. I mean, I took about half a day to get going today.
Yeah.
Just felt a little bit dodgy. I was at hospital for a blood test, and I got them to do like observations, blood pressure and stuff, because I was feeling so kind of rocky.
Floopy.
And I mean, as we're talking about death, would you like to know about the most recent near-death experience?
Yes, please do.
Because it's, that's a bit of a strange thing to say when, I guess... although, because chemo has worked for me so well, I've had like chunks of 3 months and then 9 months to go do some crazy living or whatever.
Really?
And that's happened a couple of times.
Do you feel like really, like quite, like very well in that 9 month period? Like you actually feel quite well?
Overall, I have done so far.
Wow.
Because, you know, tumours are relatively under control and growing slowly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we're doing scans when the cancer is clearly causing more trouble, then they're going for chemo again, and thankfully it's worked again. So I've kind of had that kind of normally, and it's kind of like playing whack-a-mole. and we'll just do like 3 months of horrible chemo, and then however long before those tumours start kind of
popping back up again, spawning.
And then we kind of hit them again. And in my case at the moment, with 2 kinds of chemo so far, it's been all right, just about, in order for me to, you know, have walked here. But then at the end of the last chemo cycle, and bearing in mind these things tend to get worse and worse, I mean, we're talking like 6 lots of 2 weeks.
Oof.
And by the start of the 6th one, I'm breathing funny.
Yeah.
And I am struggling for breath. It's kind of happening today a little bit. Maybe it's because it's muggy. I don't know.
Mm.
You tend to second guess yourself with this stuff.
Yeah.
But so I'm on the way into chemo, in fact. I'm not just struggling to breathe. I can take a few steps and then I have to stop at a time and gather my breath again, taking me a few more steps. Bearing in mind, it's not so long again. I mean, we're still talking about 6 months after I've run, walk from John O'Groats to Land's End.
That's wild, isn't it?
Which was last summer. And that was, 1,200 miles in 60 days.
Mm.
3 million steps. That's my favourite stat about that. Anyway, moving on. So I can barely walk.
Yeah.
This is about May or so.
Yeah.
And I present myself to the chemo ward. I'm holding myself up against a wall by this point. And they kind of go through the motions and put me in a waiting room. And then my time comes and then they do observations. And you're not having chemo today. You're going to cardiac ward.
Oh, jolly good.
Okay. No, sorry, not cardiac. Even worse. Resus.
Oh, wow. Okay. They were like, you're actually about to kick the bucket right now.
Well, I wasn't told that at first.
Oh, my goodness.
So I get a CT scan to see what's going on.
Right.
And then I'm told that I have something called a pulmonary embolism.
Yes.
Or a PE, which is a blood clot to your lungs.
Oh, my God.
And this one is saddled across the heart. That's not good, is it? Just
no.
The word saddled.
That doesn't sound good.
And then again,
I think that's quite right, is it?
So it's just going just right across. I mean, the scan just has
holy
this big old
moly.
Blocking
blob. Yeah.
In like a little strip of clotted blood just sitting there.
Just chilling.
And yeah. And then and as happens when you're first in A&E, they wait a while to find the bed. And so it's about 2 a.m. on day one.
Mm.
And I'm taken to a respiratory ward. And the poor doctor on duty, I know it's fairly serious when I'm asked about DNRs and priest visits.
Oh,
okay.
God.
And then I have to work out whether or not to tell my family whether to, like do they drop anything? Is there any point?
I'm not entirely sure. There's a possibility.
Yeah, I might not make it through the night.
Oh, my God.
But I'm told the first 48 hours are the worst bit.
Okay.
However, I'm just a little bit short of breath, but as long as I'm sat still, I'm kind of all right because my blood pressure's a bit out of whack and my heart rate's a bit high, but I kind of feel all right if I'm not moving.
Mm.
But I also know something's up because in order not to dislodge this blood clot, I'm told not even to like sit on the edge of the bed to get the right angle to have a wee. And don't forget walking to the toilet.
Don't move.
This man is taking no steps. Don't move.
This
don't
man
move.
Is taking no steps.
And I am just given quite a few blood thinner injections at this point. And over the next 5 days, nurses come along and inject me with more and more blood thinners in order to supposedly disperse this clot. I mean, I'm considered quite a serious case here.
Yeah. And then all was well, kind of?
Just about. Just about, because, I'm still here.
Well, yeah. You know, I've noticed.
That's one measure. And so the first 48 hours were the danger point, and I do walk out of hospital after 5 days. Mm. I keep asking to be discharged,
Blimey.
But they have to wait for things to be stable enough, I think.
Oh.
And I've just got this like amazingly like bruised stomach from all the stabbing, which is I guess it's getting off fairly lightly.
Yeah,
and eventually, and then I get another chemo cycle because I've still missed one.
Oh, my gosh.
So no worries about having this thing having almost killed you.
They were don't worry.
Just have some more poison here.
Yeah, back in. Let's kill all your cells. Let's do that.
That's it, because it does healthy cells as well as unhealthy cells.
Mm, so on that note of like these near-death experiences, I wonder if you've... And also, I mean, I'm assuming you're not still running anymore.
I'd like to.
Yeah.
It is an addiction. But I mean, maybe when this blood clot, I think, because it's so big, will take like months to disperse.
Really?
So getting my heart rate up just doesn't feel right yet.
Yeah, of course. And I wonder if you've had to kind of preliminarily grieve these, like kind of losing running a little bit and losing your able body. I wonder if you could talk about what that's been like.
Yeah, it's a bit strange being a shadow of your former self.
Mm.
I mean, just at the point of middle age.
Yeah.
And I found that really hard to come to terms with. The way it's manifested itself is because I'm on steroids in order to reduce brain swelling, which is kind of important, I think you'd say. I've got to take these drugs, really, because it's either that or just wake up in A&E all the time having had a seizure if I wake up. So, yeah, it's important.
Yeah.
But one of the main side effects is rapid weight gain.
Mm.
I mean, they call like the kind of like facial expansion moon face.
Yes,
and
I've
pretty much doubled my body weight from like peak running fitness to now.
Mm.
And that really bothers me
because
I was quite big as well at one point in my 20s, and having worked really hard to just be really kind of clean and healthy and run 100 miles at a time in 24 hours, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
And then just with absolutely no thought about it at all, I don't know if it, how much it's like metabolic, or if it's a case of I've just had very little self-control at times, and more steroids I've been given. I'm trying to wean myself off, mainly in order to reduce my appetite. So forget weight loss drugs.
Gosh.
It's a case of just not taking the drugs which are causing the weight gain. I'll take that on its own.
Yeah. So, I mean, moreover on that then, like, you know, you've, let's be frank, you've been given very little time.
Officially, yeah.
Officially.
I mean, you
but you never know.
You tell me I've got a year, I'll try and give you two.
Yeah.
It's possible that...
Exactly.
It's possible that chemo may keep working. It's possible that it will, annoyingly, that what worked before won't.
Yeah.
So it could be cancer is kidding me very slowly because I don't fully recover after every block of treatment.
No.
It could be that with something like a seizure or an expansion in the brain mets or another massive blood clot, it just goes like that. So I guess it's potentially killing me slowly and killing me quickly. Who knows?
And for someone who might be listening who's been diagnosed with stage four or had a terminal diagnosis, what would be your advice to them? Obviously, they're probably going to have a similar experience to you of this clarity that you spoke about and these like moments. What would be your advice to someone going through that?
That could take ages.
Hours.
Absolutely hours. I mean, I've got cancer in my liver, so I can't be over a beer, unfortunately. I'm a responsible liver cancer owner. I know some irresponsible liver cancer owners who have strong enough pain meds that they just say,
they're like, fuck it.
I'll deal with the hangover. But I don't know. I think you have to be there in order to work out how...
Yeah.
I think just with any aspect of life, make it yours.
Yeah.
Don't let anyone tell you how to live it. I don't know. There are some things that I would consider completely irrational now,
yeah.
but that at the time you have no regrets for.
Sure.
And it's just how life works out. So I went back to classroom as a primary school teacher.
You did?
For like an entire term, pretty much, although they kind of phase you back in. I didn't have to do that,
yeah.
but it just felt like the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Because just as things were getting kind of real treatment-wise... As I was being diagnosed, even it dawned on me through the medium of nominations for a national award that we were actually doing quite well, because I'm one of these people. Yeah, you know, I just have had like lifelong imposter syndrome. Like I was born 12 weeks early, you know, like and barely survived at the time. I know.
Oh my goodness.
And you know, just weighing less than 2 pounds could like fit in fit in the palm of your hands.
Oh, little babies.
Yeah, but and that then that kind of makes you feel just like this. I don't know, this kind of fragile creature maybe.
Yeah.
So a lot of life has just been kind of shrugging that off.
Yes.
And then
all of a sudden,
it's almost like all of a sudden there's no kind of obligation for society anymore. So I can just do whatever.
Yeah.
However, I felt the need to go and back into the classroom because we're talking relatively a relatively disadvantaged part of East London, and there was this one thought that I couldn't shake, which was that these kids and their families, they don't have money, they have me, and whilst I can get myself up, I'm going to keep doing that.
That's amazing.
And unfortunately, then chemo came back, and I had to just go back off because all sorts of reasons. But there's been this one thing, which is the local music school. And for any employers out there listening, this is amazing practice. And I'm aware that not every employer can do this. But we're talking like a Saturday side hustle,
yeah.
like a student jazz band with teenagers.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think that's very exciting, but it's the kind of thing that is kind of geeks me out. And it does all these kids as well, which is brilliant because they're all on the same page. You've got the proper music geeks, you know,
proper.
The ones all turn up on a Saturday morning.
Oh.
And so it kind of came to a situation where if I was well enough, then I'd turn up. And if I wasn't, I wouldn't, because it would be covered. And that was a bit of a lifeline, because I mean, and I'd say to anyone who isn't very well for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Or even has a terminal diagnosis, your life is not over yet.
Yeah.
Potentially. And I am relatively fortunate because I've had relatively long periods of relative wellness. But things like that just show that you can keep doing things. Like,
yeah.
I ran 100 miles again So from cancer, so 100 miles to cancer and back again.
Yeah.
Within a year.
Incredible.
And that was literally just, I was sitting feeling useless, wasn't sheer able to will. Work. I thought, right, I'm going to do this again. And I was able to build up back to 100 miles. Mm. Then I thought I'd have some fun. So in athletic sense, it was 2024, last year, ran the London Marathon, was playing the trombone at the same time because I thought I'd put my two joint passions together and why not? And then the fundraising really kicked in because I got a bit of attention. But then I, again, talking about that kind of need to earn your fun.
Yeah.
I ran the London Marathon 3 weeks before this massive blood clot, which was probably building at the time of running this
distance
London
Marathon. Oh, blimey, of course.
And in the middle of that big chemo cycle. And I felt really bad because I finished it but in like 8 hours, which is about walking pace.
Blimey.
Which, and everyone... But congratulated me and said how brilliant I was. But I'm thinking, well, I did it with a trombone in 6 hours and my PB was like three hours 20. That was really rubbish. You do better, mate. So
well, on that note, let's do better. I expect you running a marathon. Well, you better do it under 8 hours. That's what we're going to expect now.
Absolutely. You've got a target to beat.
Nathaniel, thank you so much for talking to us today. I wish you all the best, and I hope that you have a little bit of a pain-free rest of your existence.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and we didn't even get onto Hardcore Death Chat. So
I know, we
come
didn't
again.
Even... Next time. And if does anyone... Can we find you anywhere online, or...?
Right, I was really hoping you'd prompt me for this. So most of my story pretty much is available at bowelcancerbucketlist.com, and I seem to have been... in the media quite a bit. So if you type Nathaniel Dye, you'll probably find me. Although I found out that like no one really watches TV news or reads the papers. So as well as being like a tiny bit famous, I'm also incredibly anonymous.
Incredible.
So yeah, feel free to especially fundraising for Macmillan, bowelcancerbucketlist.com. We're on about 40 grand at the moment. I'd love to get that up.
Thank you so much, Nathaniel. Right, we're going to a break and I will be back. Bye.
Foodbar Radio. Couple Goals with Sophie Kasai and Jordan Brooke.
When I've met people in the past, I'm like, oh yeah, I really love him, he's the one. But I just knew they weren't. I'd say it, but I knew I didn't mean it. But when I met you, there was a different feeling. Like, it's like your gut just tells you. When people used to say, when you know, I was like, oh, piss off. But when you know.
When I met you and times got hard, I would come up with a strategy to make it better.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google App Stores. Yeah. The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
When you go abroad, everyone knows the best way to make yourself understood is to just say everything in English, but louder.
Four beers, please, garçon!
If only there was a way that could work with your advertising campaign. Well, there is. And you're listening to it. Because when you amplify your advertising with radio, 40 million listeners every week get the message. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Let's go back to the beginning. A mortgage advisor. What does a mortgage advisor do?
So, the main purpose of a mortgage advisor is to help you to achieve the best possible mortgage solution on time and first time. Typically, in the modern day, it's somebody who's going to hold your hand through the full home buying process, liaising with solicitors, estate agents, helping with insurance, and yeah, being in your corner on your team to make sure you achieve that goal.
What the Hell with George Bertineau on FUBAR Radio.
Up now is Ephraim Mason-Clark, professional footballer. You got the chance to work under Frank Lampard. Just tell me a little bit about him.
The first day he came in, it was just like, the word isn't starstruck, but it's just like, this is a legend in not just English football, but football in the whole world. So at the start, it was more of like, wow. And then it's like, you just switch off from being a fan to, this is like the gaffer now.
Death, a funny business on FUBAR Radio with Becky Briggs and Natasha Spencer-Levy.
It's me. Hi, I'm back. Nathaniel, what a lovely human being. I'm sending him all the best for the rest of his time on this planet. And I really hope that he gets all the care and has all the adventures that he needs to have before he heads out. On that note, we got sent a question by an audience member, which all feels very serious. Well, we got sent a few questions by some people, and I'm actually going to answer them right now, which is kind of exciting because it makes me feel like I'm not alone in this world. So we have a question from Megan. We're obviously not going to give up people's whole names or usernames, but yeah, girl called Megan. Hi, Megan. It's me. And she asked, what's the best thing someone has done for you to support you while you were grieving? And I think this is a really tricky question, but one that's really important. I'm the kind of person that my love language is acts of service. Bro, the first thing that goes when I'm in grief or I'm struggling is self-care and general day-to-day. The laundry won't get done. Everything needs a hoover. The dishes are in the sink. We are depresso espresso. And honestly, I've had a couple of friends who've just come over before in times of grief and have been like, I'm cooking you dinner. I'm going to feed you. We're watching a movie. And then I'm going to clean your house. And that's it. And that's all we're doing. We don't have to have fun. And we don't have to... You don't have to amuse me or entertain me or anything like that. And to me, that's been the most incredible stuff. Like, I've had friends who've just literally, the best scenarios were just when there's no expectation for that person. Like, there's no expectations. It's like, even when I've had a couple of friends who've literally just like carried on living their existences and I'm just in the corner. And like, honestly, for me, that's the best way. Like, I need to still be involved, but I can't physically or emotionally be there. And that is so invaluable. Like, keep inviting that person to the party. Do you know what I mean? It's like, they might be a fucking misery guts for a bit. And they might not know what to say. And they might be in their own heads and sitting in the corner eating the snacks and not saying a whole bunch and not doing their bits, you know? But you just saying, hey, you're coming. You don't have a choice, woman. Off you come. We're going up to a party. That's when it feels important. I know Becky is a little bit of the opposite. I know that Becky really likes to be left alone. she's mentioned that in the past. But I'm the kind of person that really enjoys human intervention. So, yeah. We did have another question, which was, how do you speak to your friend, from Chloe. Hi, Chloe.
Hi.
From Chloe saying, how do you speak to your friends about death without feeling like you're bringing it up all the time? Honestly, you don't. You will feel like you're bringing it up all the time. It is going to suck and it's going to be a bit tricky. But actually, I think if they're good friends, they'll understand that this is a bigger deal. And also, send them this way. Just because people like haven't grieved or haven't experienced death doesn't mean that they won't benefit from understanding these conversations and really hearing what it's like from the other perspective. So yeah, my recommendation would be keep talking about it. You'll find your people. And yeah, it's been a good show today, guys. I feel pretty inspired to keep living and make sure that we make the most of everything. We're going on a 2-week break, shockingly. We're going on summer holidays. So Becky and I won't be here for the next 2 weeks, but then we will be back and we will be bigger and cooler and sexier than ever. And we'll bring you all the death stories and all the fun. And we're going to grieve and cry and laugh together. And head to our Instagram at Death Funny Business online and have the best summer, guys. I love you. Stay cool. Bye.
Foo Bar Radio.